When I taught there in the mid-1970s, Hong Kong only had one university, one polytechnic school, and a Baptist college. With a population of 6 million, it needed more options for higher education, so it expanded with the City University of Hong Kong and Hong Kong University of Science and Technology. But by the late 1990s, this ex-colony of 7 million found it had more university seats than capable high school graduates to fill them. Rather than lower the entrance standards, Hong Kong admitted students from the China mainland, where there was still a surplus of college-able students. It was estimated that only 60 to 70% of high school graduates wanted to go to college and had the academic study ethic to succeed. A decade later, Taiwan also found herself with too many university seats. Similar to Hong Kong, Taiwan used high school exit exams to measure academic skills. And like Hong Kong, Taiwan had no intention of admitting substandard students and watering down academic requirements. So, for the past 10 years, Taiwan has been scaling back and merging its universities. A similar story has been taking place in South Korea. China started from the back of the pack. When I was at East China Normal University in 1993, only the very top scorers on their high school exit exam got to attend China's few colleges. Higher education was free. The students were all A-plus brilliant, but economically poor. By the late 1990s, China doubled its university capacity and had started charging tuition. Today, China has 20 times their former university capacity. Growth has ended because they are producing enough academic talent to serve their future, and they want to maintain academic quality so their degrees maintain their value. China and other countries in the world recognize that there's nothing wrong with wanting to be a secretary, custodian, auto mechanic, farmer, electrician, or plumber. We desperately need such professionals. Indeed, each of these Asian countries has vocational schools, often alongside their universities, and they respect the professionals they produce. Similarly, the British Commonwealth countries allow qualified students to move into either track. Germany and most other EU countries likewise have two or more pathways. But there's a lesson here that American education policymakers are ignoring. Not all of our secondary graduates are college-able, and some very capable students have no desire to pursue an academic career. Yet, American policymakers continue to set arbitrary goals for high school graduation and use college attendance as a metric in nation-to-nation comparisons. This, in turn, places public institutions under pressure to raise retention and graduation rates by any means possible. When public high schools were put under pressure to raise graduation rates, many found methods to graduate every student who had a heartbeat. As state legislatures reduce financial support for higher education, public universities become more dependent on tuition dollars, and more faculty members get called on the carpet by administrators who ask, "What's being done about student retention?" And what's being done to make sure more of your students pass your class and graduate? Of course, the real losers here are the students themselves and the value of their college degrees. Free college for everyone may or may not be financially realistic. But before we ask whether the U.S. can afford it, we should ask ourselves whether it's even a good idea for everyone to go to college in the first place. Foreign universities have already confronted this question, and in country after country, in Asia and in Europe, universities seem to have a few things in common. No matter what, keep standards high and preserve the quality and value of that college degree. These foreign universities also keep something else in mind. Not everyone wants to go to college. Not everyone should go to college.